And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector.
And joining us on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Rob.
Okay, fantastic stuff up here. As you know, Mickey, the Blue Jays eliminating the Texas Rangers, so it's off to the American League Championship. This town is buzzing. There's nothing better than baseball in October, is there?
Well, I'm used to it, but I don't get it for my team this year, but you're right about that, Rob.
Yep, well, you've had plenty of Octobers with the exciting stuff for your St. Louis Cardinals. We're talking copper for this edition of the program, Mickey. It's been a while. I think it was July of 2015 that we last took a look at copper. What's intrigued you to revisit that market now?
Well, it's been a year and a half, I guess, Rob. Mm-hmm. Is that right? A year and a half, you're telling me?
Almost a year and a half, yep. July of 2015 since we last looked at copper. And I believe just about 12 months ago, copper was trading at about $2.40 a pound. Right now, today, at about $2.20 a pound, it's been a bit of a struggle.
Well, it has. It's been a real struggle. We basically have an oversupply of copper in the world, driven by overbuilt capacity when the world's commodities boomed from, say, 2009 to 2013 or so.
And what are your thoughts right now on where we go from here, Mickey? There are many others who also echo that sentiment about an oversupply in the market. They don't see a lot of movement in the price upward that will stick, at least in the near term. Is it a supply situation, or also, you know, that U.S. dollar has been strong, and that always is a big factor in the movement of metals prices?
Well, I think it's really the fact that supply got ahead of demand. You know, we're still growing the demand for copper somewhere from, you know, it's plus or minus 3% a year. It was on the low side last year. But it's been this kind of overbuild of mine production capability and increasingly refinery capacity, mainly driven by China. China is now starting to export more refined copper than it imports. So from that point of view, they've overbuilt their smelter capacity, and that copper is being moved at various places around the world. There's lots of arbitrage going on between warehouses, and then you got to look at the great unknown, which is China, and that's unreported inventories, and that's always hard to get your head around.
Yeah, well, China is the world's largest copper producer, and it's also the world's largest copper consumer, roughly about 45% of, I believe, of total global demand eaten up by China. And it's always a hard, I think, pretty hard job to get a firm grasp on that Chinese economy and just where it's going.
Well, it's very opaque, and that's about what you can know, all you can say, and they choose to make it opaque. You know, there are some encouraging factors going on right now. The emerging market countries are much stronger over the past, well, let's say year to date. The index we track for emerging market countries, stocks anyway, is up 14% over the year. So from that point of view, there is increasing demand, particularly in Asia. But once again, we've just overbuilt mines, and we've overbuilt refineries, smelters and refineries.
And whenever you and I have talked in the past about copper, Mick, we've also talked about speculation in the marketplace. Is that taking a little bit of a backseat at this particular point of the cycle?
Well, I don't really think so. It's changed a bit. In May, the forward price curve of copper basically was negative. You know, you had backwardation, severe backwardation in late May, all the way out to forward price curve. That's reduced, or let me say that has reversed itself right now. And so from the 1 to 5 month futures curve, we would say it would be in benign contango. So it's not especially strong contango, but at least it's reversed that big backwardation thing that we encountered over, say, from the late winter into the mid-spring. So from that point of view, it's encouraging. Chinese apparent consumption is up 11% this year. But once again, they are importing. Their concentrate imports have up 35% year to date, and the refined metal is plus 8%. So that copper's going somewhere, and so what we find is there's this movement of copper that we know about from bonded warehouses in China to LME warehouses. That's been the latest thing that's going on, and then they'll move it back into China, so it's an arbitrage going back and forth.
You've never put a lot of stock in some of the bigger houses on Wall Street making a call on copper, for example. I'm reading that Citigroup, for example, has said that, maybe we're looking at a surge in copper's price of more than 40% through 2020. But you've often countered claims like that, saying, how the heck do you know what's going to be taking place 4 or 5 years down the road?
Well, your points are all taken, Rob, but I don't even put a lot of credence in the short-term forecast by banks or even the International Copper Study Group. Copper, I think, is looking better, although it has been completely range bound for, say, since mid-June, in somewhere in the 15 cents, $2.15 plus or minus 7 or 8 cents for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we've noticed is that it keeps making lower highs and higher lows, so it's increasingly looks range bound in this $2.15 range. Where do we go from here? Well, that's the great unknown. You know, we always look at copper as Dr. Copper.
Yep.
And look at it as indicating the short-term economic health of the world. But it's kind of lost that luster over the last couple of years. At $2.15, there's a significant amount of copper worldwide that on an all-in cost basis, and I'm not talking mine costs, all-in mine costs, or all-in sustaining costs, but the actual price it costs all-in to produce a pound of copper is probably not much less than the current price. So from that point of view, there's lots of people not making money in the copper business, and something's got to give at some point. We've seen this really overbuilt capacity. Peru's mining output is up 50% over the last couple of years, and that has a lot to do with it, even though Chile is off 5.5%. Africa's down 4% this year. But really, the world is awash with copper at this juncture.
Yeah, you mentioned Chile, the big copper mining giant there, Codelco. I guess it's always good to track what these companies are doing in terms of their CapEx, Mickey. That company has announced recently that it would postpone $2.25 billion in investments because it is struggling with the low price of copper. So when you see the giants making announcements like that, you know that this sector is going to be under some pressure for some time.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. Codelco is probably the most inefficient and. it's just a mess of a company. It's essentially the Chilean National Copper Company. It's a socialistic organization that historically has been wrong about copper projections. So I don't, again, put a lot of credence in what Codelco says. Now, the fact that it's postponing a bunch of CapEx over the next couple of years is not encouraging for the copper market.
Yeah.
But once again, although it's in terms of commodities, is probably one of the more transparent commodities. Mm-hmm. It's still very opaque. There's people out there. For instance, the chairman of Glencore, which is the largest trading metals company in the world and one of the largest with Xstrata under its wing, is one of the largest copper producers. Will tell you that all the numbers he sees in copper in terms of mine production are just so much fluff, and it's once again hard to predict what's going on. But my point would be that at $2.15 copper, that's not going to last forever. And from that point of view, I'm looking at copper projects right now. Right.
Okay, and wrapping up, Mickey, in terms of the price movement, you wrote, I know, in Amusing back in April of this year, you took a long-range look at the volatility in the copper price movement. And I think you concluded that, what are we looking at, about a 35% move on average over every 12-month period. So this up-and-down ride is going to continue.
Well, I would think so, Rob. And, you know, I'm hopeful for a higher copper price. You know, the world is still using 3% more copper a year. Mm-hmm. We've gotten a bit ahead of ourselves in terms of capacity versus actual demand right now. But from that point of view, I remain a secular bull in commodities and especially copper. Mm. And it's time for me as a contrarian to go out and try to find some good copper projects and the proper stock vehicles to put them in, because as contrarians, we want to move early and have patience.
Okay, nice way to wrap it up. Thanks very much for this, Mickey. We'll reconnect in a few weeks.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fult, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.